This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
A Gal Media property. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Wake up!
And a good morning to you. Thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call, SB Nation Radio. Hope you caught the 2 hours last night of Last Dance, the Chicago Bulls documentary. Kind of talking about this morning. Kind of a buzz now because, one, it was a much-needed sports documentary at a time we're craving for content. But two, it also is another historical reminder of how important Michael Jordan was not only to the NBA, but sports in general. But it also highlighted, and I think the first 2 hours did this really well, and we've got 8 more hours of this to go, which, listen, 10-hour documentary on anything would probably drive me crazy, but this was one of those documentaries last night where I'm in such a binge watching mode. As soon as hour two is over, I was like, okay, when does hour three start? When do I get that? When do I get that bit of content? Oh, I got to wait. But it also highlights what a different mindset the NBA was in the 80s and 90s compared to today. And a perfect example of that is Jerry Krause. And looking at Jerry Krause's ability to say to Phil Jackson, after winning title after title after title, you're not coming back. And then when he's come back, he's like, this is your last year. I don't care if you go 82-0, this is your last year. And taking shots at Jordan, who's, again, the best player on the planet winning championships. Think about that in today's NBA, with as powerful as the NBA players are today. Think about how powerful LeBron is. Think about how powerful Steph Curry is. I mean, it doesn't matter who. Think about how powerful players are. And how they can dictate their working environment and what Michael and Scotty and all those guys and Phil, what they had to put up with from a general manager that didn't want them there after winning all of those titles because they wanted to rebuild again. It is a different world. It is a totally different world compared to what those guys were dealing with. And you could see the frustration in Michael even today. Now, maybe some of it was for dramatic effect for a documentary he knows was going to tell his story. But also maybe that's his true emotion, that even after all of these years later, he cannot, in his competitive mind, he cannot understand for the life of him why that was called the last dance at the beginning of the season, because everyone knew this was it. They weren't going to try to get 7 championships. It's mind-boggling, and when you see it on the screen, it's even more so.
You're listening to Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, glad to be with us here on a Monday morning as we continue along Wake Up Call, SB Nation Radio. So again, talking about the documentary last night and some nuggets of goodness from that, and some nuggets that made you think and sort of process. It was, again, well done as far as storytelling element. Some documentaries have a great story, but don't tell it very well. I'll give you a perfect example. I thought the McMillions documentary on HBO, I know some people liked it. I didn't like it. I thought it was too slow. I thought it was too much for a story that could be told in a short amount of time. So anytime I see a documentary that's got a lot of parts, I wonder how much of that is Phil. Now, you're going to need a lot of parts to talk about a big event. If you're Ken Burns and you're putting together the Civil War, you're going to need a lot of hours. If you're going to do a Vietnam War documentary, you're going to need a lot of hours. You may not need a lot of hours if you're talking about the Lewis and Clark expedition, or you may be talking about Prohibition like he's done in the past. Sports documentaries are the same way. There's a lot of content, especially when you're putting somebody's career in some sort of historical context through a documentary, through their eyes, through the eyes of other people. You could interview look, if you were to do a 20-hour documentary on Michael Jordan, you just interview everybody, right? You could interview in depth every Chicagoan of importance in the last, 30, 40 years and talk about their relevance to what Jordan was doing in Chicago, how he was placing the Chicago Bulls on the sports global map. I mean, you could do that. But after a while, that message becomes repetitive. If you talk to 70 people that all tell you the same thing about, oh, yeah, well, this town was on fire for them and everybody wanted tickets and nobody could get tickets and it was a big deal, right? After a while, you go, I get it. I get it. I know. You know, if you were watching it in a vacuum and knew nothing about this guy, like if you literally walked into this and knew nothing about Michael Jordan, nothing, didn't know he was even a basketball player, and you said, sit down, I got 10 hours for you of the greatest basketball player who ever lived, and he's going to tell you a story. Does this tell the story? Will this tell the complete story? I think the answer is going to be yes. I think this right away I can tell in the first 2 hours that the storytelling is great. Take a pivotal moment, make that the focus, but then tell the backstory all the way through. So focus on the final year. Because the final year is important. Why is it important? Because everybody knew it was going to be their final run, right? Everyone knew Phil Jackson was leaving. Jordan had already had enough, already said he was going to be gone and won't play for anybody else other than Phil Jackson. And then you had Scottie Pippen demanding a trade and Jerry Krause obliged. So there was going to be this final run at a championship. Will they get the championship? Well, if you don't live in a vacuum, you know they did. But if you lived in a vacuum, here's your story.
Wait. Spoiler alert, dude.
Right. So again, it's done in a way that says, okay, here are these cast of characters. Who are they, right? That's how you have to view a documentary. You can't view a documentary assuming your audience knows everything about everybody. And that's troublesome sometimes because sometimes you don't need the backstory if you know everything, right? You know, if you're watching a documentary on John F. Kennedy and you're a John F. Kennedy expert, maybe you're just like, okay, I get it. I know he was born of the Kennedys. The Kennedys were rich and blah, 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 blah. I want to get to the presidency stuff. This is one of those documentaries that are like, okay, we're going to tell you the story about one of the greatest basketball teams of all time, one of the greatest basketball players of all time, but we have to tell you where he came from. We have to tell you his upbringing. We have to tell you that he got cut from his varsity team as a sophomore, even though everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Right? We have to tell you that, and we have to tell you that in detail, even though that's what every kid has ever heard in the history of their life, right? Every kid that's ever got cut or almost cut from a team has heard this story about Michael Jordan getting cut, but you have to
put
it in. That he almost quit.
Now, I
that he almost quit.
There was one thing I learned yesterday, and forgive me, I can't remember his brother's name, the older brother.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He was great, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, you forget that these guys have siblings. These superstars have siblings from time to time.
Right.
You always think that they're the only person in that family ever, except they have a mom and a dad. Because very rarely do you see the siblings unless you have like a Watt family where everyone is successful.
Right.
But I was surprised. I did not realize he had two brothers and a sister.
Yeah, and so you have these stories to tell about Michael Jordan. Do you tell everyone, or does you tell that story about the time?
Well, I think, you know, it's just, you know, Michael probably said to him, it's like, we're making this as real and as authentic as possible. Go at it.
Right.
And it was refreshing. It was kind of fun to see that older brother was better at Michael than everything.
Yeah. And that pushed Michael to be even better than, you know, and work as hard as he did.
Or even how his dad, I mean, I don't know if they were trying to paint the picture of, you know, dad didn't make time for Michael, you know, where we're led to believe otherwise because of the fact that he quit, you know, I'm using air quotes right now. He quit basketball to play baseball because of his father.
Right.
That's what we're led to believe.
Right. Led to believe.
Wink, wink. But I mean, it painted that picture just briefly. You know, dad didn't really care too much about Michael. It almost felt like he favored the older boy because the older boy knew how to do things similarly. But he did say in the same breath that definitely drove Jordan's competitiveness.
Yeah, no doubt. And those are, again, the drops that we were talking about, those anecdotes that people were telling, like mm-hmm. it was neat to see Roy Williams, right?
Yeah.
You know, like,
forget that he was the assistant coach during that time.
What's always interesting about these is whenever we talk about a player who's retired, right? You know, Jordan is in his 50s. He's a businessman, right? He owns a team, et cetera, et cetera. So whenever you have a story about that individual and we go back in time to their youth, they always have to find some old guy who's, you know, like living in like a nursing home, or he's living, he's like 90, and he's like, well, I remember him when he was in high school. He was 100 pounds soaking wet, right? That's not the case with Jordan. Here's Roy Williams, who's still the basketball coach at North Carolina. He's still in the game, and he remembers when he was Mike Jordan. When he got a phone call, you need to go down to Wilmington, and there's this kid, and you'll really like him. There's something going on with this kid. We think he's really special.
And by the way, who has this footage? Like, who had the footage of Jordan riding his bike around Chapel Hill?
That's right. Who, like, has
who had that?
That
footage just sitting there? Why have we never seen that footage before in its life?
It's and the same thing, some high school footage, right? It's like some high, right? It's like,
that's
it's
some great. Grainy video. That grainy was the other thing, video. Too. What was it? The opening to the Superdome. When they were doing that shot, when they were, you know, panning on the on the Superdome for the North Carolina Georgetown game,
right?
God, somebody had the gain turned way up, man. That was so overmodulated. Like,
by the way, they didn't tell you; they did not show you how that game ended. There was some tricky editing in that game.
Yeah,
the way that game, because they make it appear as if Jordan hit the game winning shot,
and that was it.
And that was it.
Done.
They did not show you Freddie Brown with the basketball and passing it to James Worthy because he mistook him for one of his own players. They don't show you that. Now, maybe they just didn't want to get into it. Maybe they just wanted to be like,
well,
look,
this isn't about
Jordan hit the shot with 16, 17 seconds left.
Yeah.
That ended up being the game winner. Let's just call it a
day. And this isn't about Worthy.
No, it's not about Worthy.
We don't need to know that Worthy was the one with the ball at the end. And,
no.
And smartly caught the ball, looked stunned, and then dribbled onto his half and then just held onto it.
That's right. We didn't need that. Right. Maybe we just, that was just too much of an ad. Like, look, we just want to get in, get out. Jordan hit the shot. There was 17 seconds on the clock. That was the game-winning bucket by all accounts.
But I think it goes back to what we all know that story.
Yeah.
We all know that, you know, like you said before, we all know that Jordan got cut from his high school team as a sophomore. We all know that Jordan.
One of the most famous stories in sports.
We all know Jordan hit that game winner and won the NCAA tournament. We know that.
We know that. You got to put it. Got to put it in context. You got to get it.
I was surprised. The one thing I did not know that I learned just I didn't know Dean Smith was the one who said, "Hey, you should go pro."
I didn't either. That's
which
right.
Which is kind of refreshing to see a coach do.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, he's looking. He's like, man, I got Jordan as a senior coming in this year.
Come on. But it's, again, I hope I think the other documentaries are going to fall in line with this sort of storytelling. Give you a little piece of that. Yeah. We got the Pistons coming up.
Yeah.
Got Rodman and the Pistons.
That's going to be so much fun.
How great is that?
If they're not interviewing Bill Laimbeer, then this, I will stop watching this documentary.
Can't wait.
Is Bill Laimbeer just going off? Because he has that Jordan mentality where he'll tell you exactly what he feels.
Yeah, right. And by the way, the other takeaway that I took from it, Bill Wellington has got a casino in his house, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, that slot machine over his left shoulder was just itching to be played. Just...
And great facial hair, too, on Wellington.
Great facial hair,
I don't even know what you call that. It's like he went for the barcode and then stopped.
Completely. And Phil Jackson's looking pretty good these days.
He looks like he can coach.
He looks like
he can't manage a team. We found that out, but he looks like he can coach.
That's right. He can still bring it. Yeah, it was still very good last night. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's. As we continue, it's Wake Up Call, SB Nation Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, when your battery goes dead, everything could come to a stop, so don't take a chance on getting stranded. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Make sure your vehicle is prepared for the weather ahead by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Robert, lucky to have seen Jordan and the Bulls at the old Chicago Stadium. That's an experience. Also at the Silverdome for a few bucks. Great for a student budget. Yeah, that was the other funny thing about the documentary was they had Obama on and they said former Chicago resident. thought that was cool. I was talking about being broke in the early 80s. Did you see how many people were watching Chicago Bulls games before Jordan got there? Like how empty that old stadium was?
Right. But the other thing I saw too, did you notice when they flashed the ticket prices?
Oh, yeah. What was it? It was like $7 for like obstructed view seat or standing room only or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Obama, you didn't have $7?
Yeah, you didn't.
I don't want to call you out or anything.
They had the Bulls. They showed so they showed the Bulls like in the 80, 81 or whatever, how bad they were. So they would show like the arena and the marquee would have all these events and then the Bulls, like Friday night Bulls basketball.
Right.
Like that's
second tier.
Nobody wanted to go. Nobody cared. And here's Jordan going to that place. Can you imagine Jordan like, all right, well, I got my work cut out for me. I got to build up.
That's when you used to have to do caller two or three for giveaway tickets.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're going to take caller two for Bulls tickets.
Yeah, or you did an advanced thing. Like, we're going to take caller 22, and then you go, hi, you're caller one. Hi, you're caller eight. Hi, you're caller 22. Let's just get this over with. Right? Just lock
it in. Didn't think that was going to take a half hour.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's got to go there, and he's got to be like, all right, I got the third largest market in the country, and I got to go drum up interest in the local NBA team. And he does it with a bang, and they have 18,000 people there. Imagine, I mean, the other part of the documentary which was interesting was how poor Scottie Pippen was growing up, and how what a tough upbringing he had.
And at least there, they had President Clinton.
Yeah.
They didn't have Arkansas resident.
That's true. They didn't have former Arkansas resident Bill Clinton. I was impressed that Bill Clinton, like, I know Bill Clinton is a big sports fan. I knew he was a big Arkansas fan. He knew of Scottie Pippen when he was at Central Arkansas at NAIA school. That's good for Bill Clinton. That's pretty great to know you're in 87 when the kid gets drafted by Seattle, then traded to Chicago. You're like, all right, I know that kid.
How funny was that, too? It was like, hey, did you realize you're wearing the wrong hat? Yeah. During the draft, she's like, I just got drafted by Seattle. They worked out a trade. You're gone.
Working out a deal. You're going to the Bulls. So Scottie Pippen, his father had a stroke, and then his brother got paralyzed in like a wrestling accident, I guess. So he's got two family members in wheelchairs. He's poor. Right, he's growing up in poverty. A lot of family members, so you can understand why 7 years, $18 million.
He jumped all over it.
Why he would jump all over that? It's. I would think it wasn't so much the $18 million; it was the 7 years.
Right.
It was. Look, I may not be making what I should be making, but I'm going to be bringing in income, big income, for 7 straight years to help my family through this ordeal.
Yeah, and we got to look at it too this way. I mean, being paid $100,000 a year would have been huge for him.
Sure.
I mean, he's making just roughly a little over $2 million a year.
Yeah.
Like 2.2.
But you know
almost.
What? It goes back to this argument that happens a lot. And it's an argument in sports I don't like because I don't think I think there's a human nature of worth where we think we would act a certain way, but in reality we wouldn't, right? Which is, here's Scottie Pippen. He grows up, he's growing up poor. He's growing up where money is very scarce. He works his way into, goes to University of Central Arkansas. He grows while he's there. He becomes this incredible basketball player enough to get drafted. He gets money, but he knows the value of a buck because he's never had money as a kid. His family's never had money. So he knows the value of a dollar. But then he starts getting frustrated because he knows his value to the organization and he's not being paid his value. Now a lot of us would always say, well, I would play for free, or I'd play for $1 million, whatever. But unless you're in that environment where you're seeing everybody else that's less than you making an extraordinarily amount more than you, and even though the contract's your own fault, right? Nobody forced you to sign it. They even told him this was a very undervalued contract, and he signed it anyway. But it's got to be tough on that level when you're saying, there's millions here. I mean, the money, they're printing money at this organization. We are selling out. We are the most popular team on the globe. The merchandise sales alone are through the roof. this organization is reaping tremendous benefit, and I can't get my cut of that. I have sympathy for guys like that, even if it's millions and even if it's a dollar figure I will never touch. Because I think you are surrounded by people. You're not the richest guy in a room of poor people. You're the poorest guy in a room of rich people, if you're Scottie Pippen. You don't see it the way you see it. Chuck Klosterman had a really good, who's a writer, wrote that the guy that's the 12th man on an NBA team, okay, the guy who never plays, right, who just maybe gets a minute or two a night, never plays. If he goes into your bar with your buddies, you feel like you relate to him. There's a relationship there. If Michael Jordan comes into your bar, you can't relate to him. But for some reason, the 12th guy at the bar seems relatable. He doesn't play, he's not famous, etc. Except his bank account is exponentially larger than yours. He's the biggest guy you'll probably ever know. He's the most athletic guy you'll probably ever know. And he's the more accomplished guy you've probably ever known, even though he's the 12th guy on an NBA team. It's the same idea. If you're Scottie Pippen and you're making $18 million over 7 years through the championship run of the Chicago Bulls, you don't. No matter how poor of an upbringing you are, you don't see it as that's $18 million more dollars than I had when I was a kid growing up. No, you're looking at your team and you're like, I'm the sixth best paid, the highest paid player on this team. I'm the sixth highest paid player on this team. I'm the second most important player on this team. I'm the guy that's been with Michael through all of this. I'm the guy that leads the team in assists. I'm the guy that's second in scoring. I'm the guy that's second in all these other categories. I'm number one in steals. I'm the guy that's the Robin to his Batman. And I'm the sixth highest paid team. That's the mentality he has. Unless you're in those shoes, it's hard to say you would do anything unless you're there, especially when you start realizing how valuable you are. Right. And so in a way, there's a part of me that blames Scottie Pippen, because I think Jerry Reinsdorf was right. Right. When he said, if you sign this, don't come back to me.
Of course.
Of course.
How many
right.
times have we heard owners say that? That's their go-to every single time.
It isn't my fault you're signing this. This is what we offer. You agree to it. You can still negotiate. We're not telling you you can't negotiate. We're not telling you you can't use the tools that you have in your favor to get a better deal.
You know,
they told him it was a bad deal.
Sometimes it works out for you, like it worked out for Ezekiel Elliott.
Sure.
But it didn't work out for Melvin Gordon.
That's right. That's right. But you know what I mean? It's like they tell him it's a bad deal. He signs it anyway because, again, he comes from an environment where he needs. And then what happens? He goes, I can't do this anymore. I can't. I got to get my money. You know, just I'm going to hold off foot surgery until, because I'm mad at the organization for not treating me right. Did the Bulls feel guilty that they were paying him $18 million over 7 years?
Probably
were smart enough to go, God, we're taking advantage of this guy. And you can look what they're paying this guy and this guy in Minnesota or wherever. You know what I mean? Like, think of all the places in the NBA that had non-stars that were getting paid more than Scottie Pippen. Right? And going, God, we're stealing this guy's services. Are you kidding me? He's the second most important player. He's the second most important player on the most important global basketball franchise on the planet, if not one of the most important franchises in the world at that time. And every check that they gave him was probably like, God, we are getting away with financial murder here. Just slaughtering this guy. These checks should be way bigger than this. And yet they warned him.
I'm looking at the salary. What was that, 96, 98?
Yeah.
So number one was Michael Jordan, making 30. Number two was Horace Grant.
See, I mean.
Then Reggie Miller, Shaquille O'Neal, Gary Payton. And then you scroll all the way down to number 128.
Yeah, exactly.
He's making 2.25. Just below $10,000 shy of what Grant Long was making.
Exactly. And that's, you know what? Here's the other thing. He was voted one of the 50 best players of all time.
Grant Long?
No. Grant Long.
Now, funny enough, he was making $17,000 less than Allen Iverson.
Oh, okay.
But I think Iverson was on a rookie deal.
Right. I think, yes, Roy Iverson was a lot younger. Just those kind of nuggets in that documentary are great. All right, we'll talk the NFL draft coming up next.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Again, Thursday night, round one of the NFL draft. Joe Burrow expected to go number one. Had a talk with Peyton Manning, who said, I wouldn't mind if you broke my rookie record for interceptions, which was very Peyton Manning-like, was it not? To be a little comical in the talk with Joe Burrow about what it's like to play in the NFL your first year. I think that puts you at ease that Manning can have a nice joke about his interception-prone rookie season. And, you know, listen, there are sometimes we go into the draft where we've had a guy pegged as the number one overall pick for a while. Maybe it's not like Andrew Luck, where we're just counting the months, you know, and years until we got to the draft, or Trevor Lawrence, where there's a feeling like this guy, when he enters the draft, is going number one. A lot of the number one picks are not surprising on like the day, but are surprising because we didn't go into the college football season thinking that they were going to be number one. Then they had an outstanding career, college career. They had an outstanding season, maybe won a Heisman Trophy, maybe set a record, maybe just, you know, set the world on fire. And then they become the number one, you know, number one pick. In Joe Burrow's case, that's what happened, right? A year before his senior season, no one pegs Joe Burrow as a number one draft pick, but he has this incredible season and now he's going number one. Kyler Murray, probably the same kind of thing, right? I mean, he has this Baker Mayfield won a Heisman Trophy. And it was a shock that the Browns went with him number one. People thought Sam Darnold would be the top quarterback taken, or you'd maybe go with somebody else or other position, whatever. So Burrow getting selected by the Bengals it would be surprising if he wasn't, if the Bengals traded out of that and somebody else took Burrow. But Burrow's going to be the number one pick. If the Bengals trade out, it's because somebody moved in and with enough of an offer to get the number one pick to take Joe Burrow. The big question is going to be, what do you do with Tua Tagovailoa and what do you do with Justin Herbert? They're going to go in the top 10, it looks like. But if the Giants are ready to move out of the four spot, as they claim they are, which is what you say in the draft because you do want your phone ringing. You never say you're set, right? If you're a general manager and if you're the Redskins, right, you never say you're set. You have to answer the phone. But the Giants seem to be open to the idea of trading, even though we heard last week that Dave Gettleman doesn't usually do this, didn't with Carolina, likely not to do it with the Giants, but it depends on what the package is. Does that open the door for the Chargers, who step up and take a spot to get one of the quarterbacks, and that leaves the Dolphins with the third guy on that list, however you want to put it. I have gone back and forth, this is why this has been different. The Tua Tagovailoa injury is a big deal because we have absolutely no idea where we are with it and how much trust people are actually having with it, right? You can watch a video, but you really do want to know from your own doctors doing their own physicals, how well is that surgery? How well did it go? The surgeons say it went great. Okay. But they're not going to tell you it went bad either. Can you imagine being a surgeon and you're telling people that it didn't go well? Well, I think there's some HIPAA laws that you're probably breaking, but also think about the liability. If you're a doctor, you wouldn't say, well, you know, the surgery, I mean, you tell me. I mean, we did the best we could, right? Because the liability is incredible. You're costing a guy millions of dollars if you come out and say, we did the best we could, but hoping it works for the best. No, you say it went great. It went fine. It was successful. But if you're a team, you can't take the word of those surgeons that everything is going to be fine. You have to watch the video workout, and you are supposed to have a personal interview and have them go through a physical and to see exactly how that hip works. And I think if you are a team like the Dolphins, and you've kind of liked what Tua brings as a quarterback, right? When he's healthy, quick, very accurate with the football, doesn't really take a lot of shots from, you know, snaps from center, but nevertheless, he is very good decision maker. If you're impressed with all of those things, maybe you draft him anyway and go, look, this is a marathon, not a sprint. We're not going to throw you out there in week one. If you come to us and there's still a little bit of issue with that hip surgery, we'll work it through until you're ready, because we believe when healthy, you're a better prospect than Justin Herbert, and that's why we are picking you ahead of him. A healthy Justin Herbert, still behind a questionable Tua Tagovailoa, at least in the Dolphins' mind, right? Maybe that's not the case with somebody else. That's the story. But as I said earlier in the show today, if Tua's falling, if there's a report that teams are starting to believe that says, you know, it's too much of a gamble. That hip surgery, I don't know. There were certain things that I didn't like. There were certain things I want to know more about. And this is too important of a pick. So the Dolphins take Justin Herbert. The Chargers go with somebody else thinking the quarterback for their future is next year. If Tua starts falling, what happens to him? Where does he go? How far down does he go? That's the danger of the position, right? We're talking a little earlier about Michael Jordan, about the documentary last night, right? Talking about the Portland Trailblazers taking Sam Bowie over Michael Jordan because they needed a center. Bobby Knight famously saying, draft Jordan, make him play center. I mean, he's the best player. In the NBA, you should always draft best player on the board. Always. Always. You need a center, find your center somewhere else. But if you have a transitional talent that can change your franchise, then you take that person and then you figure it out somewhere else. The NFL doesn't really work that way.
Yeah.
If you have a quarterback, you don't take Justin Herbert. Right? You just don't.
Yeah, I mean, because you're the Redskins. You have a plethora of quarterbacks right now. Right. You don't need to spend one now.
You don't need them. I don't care. Unless you plan on ripping that roster down to the nub, and the guy on the board is a can't miss quarterback, then you go, we don't need that guy. He may be the best player on the board, but we don't need him. We don't need him. That's what happens to quarterbacks, because you reach a group, all set. So you go from a top 10 pick, and if there's any concern, and you fall out of that top 10, and you get into the group of teams that don't need a quarterback, you are plummeting. Plummeting. It's happened to Aaron Rodgers, happened to Brady Quinn, happened to a couple of guys. So what happens is a team has to go, I'm going to catch you as your fall. Johnny Manziel, right? Remember the Cowboys wanted Manziel at one pick? Remember they famously were going to take him? And Stephen Jones stopped his dad from, there's the story about how they had Manziel's name and Stephen Jones stopped it.
Yeah.
They said, no, you don't. We're good.
Yeah, you don't want him.
No. And the Browns sensed that and moved up. I think Browns had like two picks in a small window. And they took one player and then they got up and they took Manziel at that spot, thinking maybe Dallas would move in. Right. That's what happens to quarterbacks. Right, you need a team to jump in there. You know, does Bill Belichick do it? I mean, I don't know. I mean, who knows? But in all likelihood, these three guys are gobbled up in the first seven picks of the draft. Right, that's the way I'm looking at it. But Tua's the one. The thing you'll hear a lot this week is you'll hear a lot more analysis on that about Tua's hip injury and where is it affecting it. But here's the thing that always catches me in the draft. What will happen is there will be things we think we know and are things that seem obvious, right? You know, Joe Burrow should go one, Chase Young should go two, Jeff Okuda should go three, corner out of Ohio State. Giants will be at four. Maybe they trade out of it. Maybe they take, somebody, a defensive guy, whatever it is. And the Dolphins should take the second best quarterback that's on the board, right? In their world. That seems obvious. Here's what's going to happen. There's going to be an arc. The next couple of days, that obvious thing is going to be, hearing rumblings, the Giants are trading out. Maybe Washington doesn't take Chase Young. Maybe they're interested in trading out. Oh, what will the Lions do? Maybe the Lions will trade. Maybe the Lions won't take Jeff Okuda. Maybe the Lions will take. Okay, that's what's going to happen. Then we're going to get closer to draft day. Then draft will happen, and we'll go back to Monday. And all of those things that we thought we knew are the things we know we know. We'll be like, well, there it goes. It went exactly the way we thought earlier in the week. We only got a little squirrely. We got a little crazy because we wanted to feel out maybe there's going to be something different. We always think there's going to be these huge moves, and they're not. A lot of times, sometimes we just don't get them, right? You know, I'll give you, remember last year, Kyler Murray? Like, well, maybe they don't go Kyler Murray. They got Josh Rosen. Maybe they don't trade Josh Rosen. Oh, maybe they take Nick Bosa. Oh, maybe they take somebody else. I don't know. Who do you think they? Oh, Kyler Murray. Oh, and they trade Josh Rosen. Okay, we're done. Right? I mean, basically, what you think is going to happen early in the week, you get a little nuts. You get a little, you expand your horizons, and then it kind of goes back to the what you thought
before.
You
get video game nuts.
Yeah, you get a little video game nuts.
All of a sudden, you're playing the game.
Right, if I were the Chiefs, I would give my second, third, fourth, two fours next year's one, and I'd move up and trade it with the Titans. Yeah, okay. That's
speaking on that crazy impressive thing. Did you see the? There was a tweet going around saying, "What if Twitter was back when the Saints gave up their picks for who they gave them up to for Ricky Williams?"
Oh, Minnesota? Yeah. Oh God, they unloaded. Oh, that was Ditka's big thing. Remember? To get Ricky Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here it is. You ready?
Yeah.
The 1999 draft trade. The Redskins received 99 first, 99 third, 99 fourth, 99 fifth, 99 sixth, 99 seventh, 2000 wow. first, 2000 third. Saints received 99 first round. That was it.
That's crazy.
So, I mean, the Saints literally traded away every single one of their draft picks for Ricky Williams.
For Ricky Williams. That was big Mike Ditka.
He went all in.
All in.
I mean, he pretty much said, Minnesota, hold our beer while we trump your Herschel Walker trade.
Exactly. Exactly. Remember we had Herschel Walker on the show that time?
Yeah.
I was like, how does it feel to be part of that trade?
Well, I mean, and look at that. Like, look what the Cowboys did with all those picks. And then look at what the Redskins did.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, they didn't do anything.
They didn't do anything. Yeah, exactly. When you go to that kind of draft haul, you got to hit a home run.
Yeah.
There's a report that Leonard Fournette, the Jaguars are shopping Leonard Fournette. Yeah. Now, here's the funny thing about this. Does anybody tell Leonard Fournette? Because he's absolutely lobbying for them to take Cam Newton. Yeah. Right? Like, he's on social media begging the Jags to take Cam Newton. Pick up Cam Newton. Did somebody tell him ahead of time, wait, hold on, you might not even be here if they get Cam Newton.
We might pick up Cam Newton, but you're going to the Patriots because they like to take a whole bunch of running backs.
It would be – I have to kind of look it up, but – and I'll probably bring it up tomorrow. But that makes you think, like, the Jags had a period of time where they were picking in the top 10, if not the top 5, every year for this huge period of time.
I think for their entire existence, they were always picking in the top 5.
How many of those guys are still around? Like, how many of them turned into Dante Fowler's gone, Jalen Ramsey's gone, Blake Bortles is gone, you want to get rid of Leonard Fournette? I mean, the list of players that they picked up in the draft with the third pick, with the fourth pick, with the sixth pick, with all of those guys. They couldn't make any of them work.
You think Goodell looks down at the sheet and goes, yeah, we're the Jags?
Yeah.
they're normally here on page one. We got a typo. Somebody needs to go and reprint this, please.
Usually I'm introducing them about this time, right around this time. They should be picking a game changer that's going to change the franchise.
On defense.
On defense.
Because that was always their thing.
That they're going to get rid of 3 years later.
Always on defense.
I would be so frustrated if I was a fan of the Jaguars. Luckily, I don't know any of them, so I can't insult
them. Yeah, because they're all over in London.
That's right. And they're over in London, complaining at the pub. Exactly.
London Jaguars.
Going to trade another first-round draft pick, are we? Oh, God. Team does not know what it's doing. Oh, tally-ho. Oh, wish we still had Tony Boselli lying around. Whatever happened to that?
That was actually a decent pick by them. We gotta give them that one.
Give him that one. He might be one. He might be their best player ever.
Not Blake.
Yeah, not Blake. Who was the quarterback that got him the AFC title game years and years ago? They had
Well, Kerry Collins, the Panthers, right?
That was the Panthers. Who's the other, who was the guy first year, like 96? Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue. I hate when this happens.
Rick Meyer?
No. It was, I'm going to look it up. Forget it. I give up. I'm trying to think. This is a quarterback in 96. They lost to the Patriots and Bledsoe that year. God, I'll look it up. All right, when we come back, I'll have that answer. It's Wake Up Call, ESPN Nation Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it was Mark Brunell that I was thinking of.
Yeah.
I was like, that was the guy that led them to the AFC title game in 96. I can't believe I forgot that, because he also beat the Broncos in Denver. I'm ashamed. By the way, I looked up the first-round picks for the Jaguars since 2010. Tyson Alualu, gone. Blaine Gabbert, gone. Justin Blackmon is still on the roster, but he hasn't played with them for years.
Wide receiver, right?
Wide receiver. Okay. From Oklahoma State. Hasn't played for them in years.
Still on the roster?
Still technically on the roster. He's like, it's on probation from the league and whatnot. But Luke Jokel, gone. Went to Seattle. Blake Bortles, gone. Dante Fowler, gone. Jalen Ramsey, gone. Leonard Fournette, on the trading block. Tavian Bryan and Josh Allen, still with the team. Those in 2018 and 2019. So there you go. Those are picks that are supposed to improve your franchise, to give you the building blocks of success down the road. And I just listed a whole bunch of them within the last decade that are no longer on the team. Well played, Jacksonville. They really do want to move to London, don't they? Keep screwing up the draft and then trading players way earlier than you probably should. Well played.